Today's program has been brought to you by Route 11 Potato Chips. Made with a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. For more information, visit www.rt11.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good afternoon and welcome. This is Straight No Chaser on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Katie Kiefer, and I'm broadcasting live from the back of Roberta's in Bushwick at 261 Moore Street. So today, my friends, we are going to go back to a subject which I have a really hard time getting my head around. I did a show about this about a year ago or so with the National Resources Defense Council and another group called As You Sow. We were talking about the sort of burgeoning field of nanotechnology. And I've been kind of following this in my trade rags. And recently, my buddy Eric Hoffner brought to my attention a wonderful new article in his magazine, Orion, written by my guest today, Heather Miller, who's calling us in from, or we're calling her from San Francisco. Heather Millar has covered science, health, and technology for 20 years, contributing to magazines such as Sierra, Smithsonian, and The Atlantic. And she now lives in her family with her family in San Francisco. Thanks so much for taking some time with me today. Now, you titled your article in Orion. It's the January-February issue, right?
That's correct.
Okay, so it's called Pandora's Boxes, which I thought was a really great title for it. Can you just give us a quick thumbnail of what nanotech is for people who either have never heard of it before or don't remember because it's so hard to like wrap your mind around those slippery little suckers?
Surely. Nanotechnology, the problem with nanotechnology is that it is such an incredibly broad field. It is described in some policy wonk papers as being the next industrial revolution, and it has the potential to revolutionize solar cells for solar power, medicine for diagnostics, materials, making them lighter and thinner, just pretty much anything you can imagine. Nano stands for one billionth. So a nanometer is one billionth of a meter. So a nanoparticle, the common definition is it's something between one nanometer and 100 nanometers, which is just a jillion times smaller than the width of a human hair. It's almost impossible to really conceive, which I think is why one of the reasons why it's unregulated is it's so hard to think about. One thing to remember, though, is that nanostructures are really basic to all life. If you think about DNA and RNA, those are essentially nanomachines, which I thought was pretty fascinating. And the other thing, bacteria can communicate with little nanowires and stuff, so it's out there in nature and has been probably forever. The difference is that today, scientists and industrial researchers have found certain types of nanoparticles. Now, this is different from nanorobots, which are big in science fiction.
Yeah, we're going to talk about those at the end.
Yeah, people are working on the nanorobot thing, but it's so hard, you know, to figure out how to do that. Those things are on the horizon in the next couple of decades. But what's here now are nanoparticles. And nanoparticles are basically little things. It could be gold, it could be titanium dioxide, it could be silver, it could be carbon, whatever. It's in that size range from one nanoparticle to 100. And the exact definition is a matter of some debate among scientists. No one can quite agree on exactly what, you know, where that boundary is. But what scientists do point out is that just because something is small doesn't necessarily mean it's important. What makes the nanoparticles that are being used in industry and medicine and many other fields so important is that smallness gives them some sort of special characteristic that we can use. And so that's why there are literally trillions of dollars going into research and development of commercial products. involving nanoparticles.
Well, one of the things, of course, this being a sort of food-based radio station, I wanted you to specifically identify some of the food products where nanotechnology or nanoparticles are being widely used. I mean, you mentioned things like Pop-Tarts and M&Ms. What else is there?
Yeah. Well, the Pop-Tarts and M&Ms, what is being used in the Pop-Tarts and M&Ms generally is a kind of nanoparticle called titanium dioxide. And it's a whitening agent. It's kind of like you would think of the old kind of sunscreen that lifeguards used to put on their noses.
Yes.
And so they add this nanotitanium dioxide to things like Pop-Tarts and chewing gum and frosting and stuff to make the stuff super white. But there are also nanoparticles. Nanoparticles are very useful in coatings. I talked to one scientist that was talking about putting a coating on top of an airplane and you could switch, put on a current, and it would melt all the ice so you wouldn't have to, like, do the big de-icing thing in the wintertime. In the food context, they are, I know at least one case in which they are lining beer bottles with a nanoparticle film in order to keep the beer fresh for longer. If anyone's ever tried to drink a stale beer, you can see why that might be a good thing.
And isn't nanosilver used as an antimicrobial in, say, packaging for various things?
That was the next thing that I was going to talk about.
Sorry.
Is that there's nanosilver, and silver has been known to have sort of antibacterial properties for a long time. It seems to build up on the membranes of bacteria and make them explode.
Cool.
So, pretty cool. But they put nanosilver in things like knives and cutting boards. So those are, food contact type places.
What about, I'd read somewhere, and this was what piqued my interest last year when I interviewed the scientists from NRDC, was that they were considering using it as a packaging agent for meat products. Like, you know, that they have that sort of little foam, you have your styrofoam tray, that little sort of sopper-upper of juices thing, and they were going to improve that with nanosilver. And I thought, oh God, that's kind of scary, because isn't it possible for the nanosilver to just be absorbed by the meat? Do you think that's possible, or have they already figured that out?
I think it's absolutely possible.
No,
because it's so small.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
And nobody really knows. I mean, and the thing is that this is not a time to get completely hysterical and feel like we're all being poisoned. But the thing is that this is all happening, and there's really no regulation, and they are introducing just gobs and gobs of this, of these nanoparticles into food and to many other things. And we have no earthly idea exactly what the effect is going to be. And I'm not going to say it's the end of the world or anything, but we should be having much more of a conversation about it than we are.
Well, I think that what's interesting about this is that the FDA, has allotted the description of grass generally regarded as safe to almost all the nanoparticles that are certainly used in the food chain. And obviously they consider it safe for things like sunscreen and deodorant, where it's already been widely used. So, so I guess my question is, if they don't care, if they're not worried, is that simply because they're ignorant of the properties of nanotechnology, or is it because, they're being leaned on to accept this technology on the basis of what companies tell them is safe?
I think this is a dynamic that's true pretty much across our economy, is that we don't think ahead in this country. They tend to seem to think ahead more in Europe, where they try to investigate things before they put them in their food. I don't think we do that as much here. I don't think that consumer protection is as much of a priority, quite honestly. Think that it's not that the FDA doesn't know about nanoparticles and nanotechnology, and the national government is very aware of it. There's a national nanotechnology initiative, and there are several different agencies that have nanotechnology working groups and all that sort of thing. But the thing is that there's just very little research that is being done into the safety. There's tons of research being done in applications, but not very much in terms of safety. And because it's so small and nobody knows about it and there's no public outcry, there's just no political will to fund that much research. That's why it's so interesting, the work that I wrote about in Orion magazine, the fact that they have this coalition of half a dozen or so universities that are really trying to do this work. But to give you some sense of the difference in scale about safety research versus applications research, there's the statistics about how much nanoparticles are worth and how big the industry is are really kind of fuzzy. Because, for instance, if you say that you there's a product that, say, has nano silver in it, right? Do you value the amount of the nano silver or the whole product? And they tend to value the whole product, which, of course, grosses up the total. But estimates are that the investment into applications is in the trillions. Sorry for that call waiting. I'm sorry I didn't turn that off. Anyway, the research into applications is in the trillions. And the budget for the Center for the Environmental Implications of Nanotechnology, the group that I wrote about, is like about $10 million. So, the asymmetry there is pretty amazing. It's not that the FDA doesn't know, it's just that there's no research because it hasn't been funded.
There's no funding, exactly. I was just going to say. We're not. We're going to talk right now about just quickly about something, and then I want you to go in the second half of the program. I want you to go in depth to what you discovered when you were doing that, when you were writing the article. But just asking you a question, who exactly is behind this tremendous funding of research into applications? Like, is it every industry across the board, electronics, aeronautics, construction?
Everything you can imagine. It's everything you can imagine. And if you go, there's a project on emerging nanotechnologies that has a database of consumer products that you can, look up and see if your Pantene shampoo has nanoparticles in it or whatever. They're not going to tell you specifically what those nanoparticles are, but there are more than 1,000 products. And it's everything from paint and bricks, to hair dryers.
Wow, so that's stunning.
All over.
Well, Heather, hang on the line there because Jack has to run a quick station break. Right, Jack? And we'll be right back with Heather Millar from Orion Magazine.
The following program has been brought to you by Route 11 Potato Chips. From the moment Route 11 Potato Chips dropped their first batch of chips back in the early days of 1992, they understood their destiny as a high-quality producer. Instead of succumbing to the frenzy of mass production, they took advantage of their small size and made chipping a personal art form. The payoff was immediate. An incredible potato chip. With a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. In this world of uncertainty that we live in, Route 11 Potato Chips believes comfort food should be just that. Know where your food comes from. For more information, visit RT11.com. You're listening to the Knife Show remix of Coma by Paper Twin on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
We are back. This is Straight No Chaser on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Katie Kiefer, and my guest on the phone today is Heather Millar. And that was special nanoparticle music just for you, Heather. I hope you appreciated that.
Where did you find nanoparticle music? That's one application I haven't heard of.
Well, my beloved engineer and friend Jack was able to pull that together for us. So now I want to delve into exactly what you got into with that group at Duke University. It was a coalition of 6 or 7 universities, as you said. They have an acronym. It's CEINT, I believe, which I no longer remember what that stands for, but you will tell us. And they've conducted a very interesting series of experiments. So can you just take us through that whole thing and what you came away with?
Sure. It's the Center for the Environmental Implications of Nanotechnology. And what I wrote about was one of their experiments. They actually have different scientists at different universities are doing all kinds of things. There's a lot of disagreement about, there's not even a catalog of all the nanoparticles out there because they're being invented at such a feverish pace. So they are doing that. They're compiling a sort of a what would you call it? I guess a dictionary of nanoparticles
wow.
or something.
Yeah, sounds like
and they're doing a lot of toxicology research, and you know there are many different kinds of scientists that are involved in this effort. What I wrote about was one experiment where they took nanoparticles, nanosilver. And they created a bunch of boxes that were like almost like terrariums, but they were the size of a big horse trough. Mm-hmm. And they constructed little wetlands in each one. And then they introduced nanosilver, that's the nanoparticle that's often used in antibacterial things. It's used not only in cutting boards and knives and other food containers and other things, but it's also even used in condoms. And socks.
Ooh, yeah.
So that ought to get people.
And jock straps.
got my editor's attention.
so watch it, boys.
so they introduced the nanosilver, and they did it in various ways. The way that I wrote about it in my lead was they sprayed the nanosilver. And when they did that, the people had to wear clean suits looking like sort of the bad guys in
right.
E.T. They had to wear,
suits
and hats and gloves and the whole thing. And the reason they did that, it's not because it's necessarily that dangerous. It's just they don't know. They just don't know.
Well, they don't know what happens if you inhale it, right? I mean, they have no clue
right.
what happens
then. They have no clue what would happen if you inhaled it, which is why they wore the clean suits.
Yeah.
In other cases, they just... they put a pulse of silver into the water, or they put it into the dirt. And the thing is that they found that, and so then they let it go. You know, they would, there's a chemical reaction that they can measure, and I won't bore everybody with all that, but they would measure a particular chemical reaction to see where the silver was going in these little miniature wetlands. They called them mesocosms. It's sort of a middle ground between microcosm and macrocosm.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, and so they did this for about a year. They watched very carefully for a month, and then they, then it was like once a week they would monitor stuff. And then at the end of a year, they basically harvested all the stuff in these mesocosms and ground it all up and tried to figure out where the silver was and where it had gone.
So wait a minute. Let me back you up for a second. Were there any, in these little mesocosms, which you described as a terrarium, were there insects? Were there any, was there any flora? Flora?
Excuse me. There were sedges and native grasses,
mm-hmm.
Water plants, zebra fish.
Okay.
And then the insects, and they wanted them to be open. The problem is that if you're trying to track something as small as a nanoparticle, even in a lake or, you know, a small pond, it's so big, it's almost incomprehensible how you would do
yeah.
that. So that's why they had initially wanted these mesocosms to be open to nature, but unfortunately then the raccoons started coming to fish and started eating up all the zebra fish in the boxes. So they had to put an electrified fence around so that the larger mammals wouldn't come in. But they were open. They were open to insects and open to birds and such.
Fascinating. So at the end of the year,
the other thing that was. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say. So at the end of the year, they harvest this stuff: the fish, the grasses,
right.
the dirt,
right.
the water,
right.
and then they measured
right.
how much nanosilver or how it had accumulated or how it had dispersed.
How it had accumulated, whether it had gone up the food chain, if it had changed any kind of biological thing. And if you think about the complexity of doing this in a small, little, you know, experimental wetland that's 3 feet by about 8 feet, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
This, you know, finding the nanoparticles, they had to use all these different kinds of microscopes, and it's super complex, and they're still analyzing the data. But one of the things that they found was that things didn't act the way they expected, so that things that seemed to be non-toxic in the lab ended up being toxic in the mesocosms and vice versa. So it really underscores how important it is to sort of do, they call these experiments kind of ground truthing
uh-huh.
For the lab that's done in the work, that's done in the lab, because stuff is, you know, nature changes things.
Yeah.
And so we're letting all this stuff out into nature, and so what the heck what's it going to do? We're not really sure.
Well, that brings me sort of to my next question, which is that You made this very excellent point, which was that as a society, we've been here before. And I know we touched on this for just a second in the first half of the show, but we're releasing, quote unquote, miracle technology before its potential health and environmental ramifications are understood, let alone investigated. So my question to you, Heather, is like, given that we did this with GMOs, that we've done it with PCBs, with, you know, what is the plastic compound that's just been withdrawn, bisphenol P?
Bisphenol A or
right,
whatever
bisphenol
it is.
A. I mean, there's just no end to these products that are rushed into consumer, consumer contact, and then without ever having really done any due diligence. And I'm just wondering, like, how is it that the government or that the companies that are involved in producing these products and pushing them onto the public, why is there no accountability for this kind of thing? I mean, I don't understand how these things get to happen without enough due diligence, either on the part of industry or on the part of the FDA or the USDA or whatever agency is in charge of this.
Well, I mean, as I was, you know, in the first half of the program, I was dissing our regulatory philosophy in this country.
Well, they don't have any money is one problem. So,
don't have any money, but more of a problem, you know, the thing is that actually after I had written that point about the MTBE and bisphenol A and, mm-hmm. and DDT and all these things, actually the nanoparticle thing it's the same, but it's fundamentally different in that bisphenol A was used to make plastic softer, okay?
Right.
And not to crack. And MTBE was supposed to make gas more efficient. And DDT was supposed to, you know, kill all the bugs so we could grow enough food for billions of people. All those seem like great things. Those are one application, right?
Whereas nanotechnology
is freaking everywhere.
Yeah.
They're introducing it into pills. They're using it for diagnosing cancer. They're putting it in your tennis rackets and your golf clubs and your carbon nanotubes. They're made to use, they can make things much stronger, so they're being integrated in everything you can imagine.
Because they're very lightweight.
Because they're very lightweight.
Yeah.
So the problem is also that nanoparticles are not one thing.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Nanoparticles, and no one can agree on exactly what they are.
Right.
So how do you regulate something if you can't agree on what it was? Earlier this week, I was on a panel with Mark Wiesner, who is the Duke scientist who heads the Center for the Saints.
That was excellent, by the way, that panel. I listened to it.
Okay.
And I'm just going to say for people right now, if you want to go listen to the panel, it's on the Orion Magazine website, and it is accessible. It's free. You can just dial it up, plug in the little plug-in player and listen to the panel. It was so interesting. So I'm sorry, Heather, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I want to make sure people can go to that.
The point about that panel, though, is that I found was really interesting is that each scientist, and they're all, you know, really big deals in their field, they can't agree.
I noticed
that,
too.
I asked them, so how are we going to regulate this? How are we going to agree on what nanoparticles are? And the thing is that we can't agree on what they are, and we don't have one test that we can do. Like, I don't know this for sure, but I imagine that there's probably one fairly simple way to find out if there's DDT in the soil, but there's not a simple way to find out if there are nanoparticles in the soil. So that's a real problem. When I asked them, you know, everybody just kind of avoided that question because it's the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
You know, we don't know.
But
we don't know how to define it.
Right. It's the unanswerable question.
How can you regulate something that you haven't even defined?
Yeah, exactly. And not only can we not define it here.
And it makes people lots of money.
Yeah. Okay. So we only have 5 more minutes. So I do want to devote a couple of minutes to the money trail. Can you map out the money map for us? I mean, how, you know what I'm saying though? Like, who is the big winner with nanotechnology? Like, how do companies benefit from this? And does the consumer benefit from this? I mean, should we be looking at this as something where something where, you know, like you and I can wring our hands about whether or not it can be identified and you know, properly regulated and so forth and so on. But in the end, I mean, you know, given the fact that we play pretty fast and loose with public safety anyway, if this is really great for consumers, why should we worry? What, you know, can't we just take our chances here?
I think we should worry because there have been tests on lab animals. And there have been tests on sunscreen, and the kind of nanoparticles that are used in sunscreen has been shown to corrode metal prematurely, an Australian study. There are studies that show that that nanoparticles can hurt the brains of various kinds of fish. they sail past the blood-brain barrier. Sorry again about the call waiting.
That's okay. I can't hear it, so don't worry about it.
Okay, good. I'm glad you can't hear it. They build up in your gut, and they seem to, and they also seem to go up the food chain. So that nanopart, and that was the case with DDT, is DDT didn't seem to be toxic in small amounts, but it kept accumulating and accumulating. And that seems to happen also with certain kinds of nanoparticles. Okay, so who wins? Who wins financially? Corporations, obviously. But we all win, because the problem with nanoparticles is it's not all bad.
Right.
You know, it can make solar cells more efficient. There are certain kinds of nanoparticles that clean up toxic spills. There's one study where they used some kind of nano net or whatever to reconnect the spinal cord of a lab mouse. Okay, that's
jumping,
Jiminy. Huge.
That's pretty big. Yeah,
yeah, that's a huge. So we all benefit, and it's. But we really, because it's so difficult to understand, there is. There's a very, very little. There's very little public awareness, and I think until the public starts saying, "Hey," and they are doing this, like Friends of the Earth in Australia has a huge nano environmental nano initiative that they're really big on this, especially sunscreen, which I guess is a big deal in Australia.
I would think so.
But we need to be talking more about this, and we just aren't.
Right, right.
And it's going to be up there with biotech in terms of the revolutionary changes that are coming because of this technology.
Well, I think it's fascinating. Unfortunately, I have to cut you off there, Heather. I want you to promote whatever you want. Do you have books? Do you have articles? Do you have a website?
I have books that are in process. No, I have books on process. My website is hmillarwriter.com, and I would just encourage everybody to check out Orion. It's just a fabulous magazine.
It is fabulous.
Relatively small circulation, but they just do lovely work, and I hope that your listeners will check it out.
Well, I'm a big fan of Orion myself, and I was very happy to have somebody, who's written for the magazine come on to the show. So I want to thank you so much for joining us. I hope as this kind of unfolds, you'll come back. I'm assuming that you're going to continue to follow the story. I hope so, after having done all of that work.
Oh, my God. Well, I'm trying to figure out how to get together a book proposal about it, but, stay tuned for that.
I certainly will. I mean, there's so much more to say about this, but anyway, we won't. We'll do it another time. So thank you so much, Heather. And next week, my friends, the wonderful Maren McKenna will be joining me. She is a writer for, just about every, she's a longtime science writer and has written for every major publication in the country. And in this case, she wrote for the Food and Environmental Reporting Network, FERN, my friends at FERN. She will be joining me to further discuss the impact of antibiotic use in agriculture on human health. Girls, this one is especially for you. See you next week, folks. Thanks for listening, and thanks for my sponsor. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.